From the headlines to the deeper issues, 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Your home is likely the biggest purchase you will ever make, but depending on where you live, you may be able to increase your income by adding what is called an ADU, an affordable dwelling unit, to your property. But what is an ADU? What does it mean? And how might it also help others find a more affordable place to call home? Well, joining me to talk about this are Dana Jones, President and CEO of the United Planning Organization, known, of course, here in D.C. as UPO. Also, Amanda Stevenson, President of Unify, a nonprofit organization. Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a comment or a question about this undertaking. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dana and Amanda, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Amanda, talk to me a little bit about ADUs. Give me a working definition of what they are.
It's my understanding accessory dwelling units, and that's what the acronym is for, are structures or a part of a home that you're able to legally rent out, is able to bring value to your home in the form of extra income to make sure that you're able to meet payments, better quality of life, and also be able to provide opportunity for someone else to stay here in the District of Columbia. And I heard of the idea, and I know that this is a great opportunity for a lot of people to stay in the district.
This is not a new idea, renting out a basement or a room over a garage, or perhaps if you have a large enough property, and depending on where you live, you may have something called a mother-in-law suite, for example, right, where you can put your mother-in-law out there, or certainly you can rent it out to others. But as it stands in 2019, this is seeing a bit of a revival, I would imagine.
Right. I think as a culture, historically, and other cultures have done it, and they still do it, and that's how a lot of people gain and continue to be wealthy. The multi-gen, as you're saying, or multi-generational living has been something, or shared housing, co-housing, is a lifestyle that a lot of people are adopting now, and I'm glad that D.C. is actually open, and they've been open for a few years to the ADU concept, to make sure that people could have access to the city and actually stay here. Again, is a great revival. And carriage homes, a lot of them have been in other parts of the city, but I think specifically in Ward 7 and 8, where a lot of those things aren't traditionally there, but you have more land space to add another structure to that property, is something that a lot of people want and need to actually add more income to their homes or just create another living space for extended family.
Is this the same as the relatively new phenomenon, the Airbnbs? Would you consider that pretty much the same thing?
It can be. It's all in who's going to use this space. For instance, my basement and the upstairs living space of my home aren't separate, and I can't really see sharing space with a stranger. So actually an ADU separate unit would be ideal for me and other families in that same setting. I have smaller, younger children, and I just really can't see sharing the space with a perfect stranger. And I just think with a separate unit that gives you separate and distinct separation in spaces for whether you're renting it out to Airbnb or you have someone else. So it could be an option for Airbnb, but is not its only use.
Mm-hmm. Dana, UPO is kind of spearheading this movement east of the river. Talk to me about what you're doing there.
Well, what we're engaged in now is a partnership with Citibank, who is a private investor in this endeavor, along with some consultants and advocates of Smart Growth, the Smart Growth Coalition, that is a regional coalition that's really looking at better land use strategies and ways to incorporate density in the city. You're right in saying that the ADU concept is not a new concept, but what happened in 2016 is the Bowser administration looking for multiple strategies to increase the supply of housing stock propagated some legislation that basically allows for these dwellings to be created not simply as English basements or granny apartments, but they can actually be standalone free units in low density communities. And so when we look at wards 7 and 8, where there tend to be larger lot sizes, where there are more spacious yards and opportunities for landowners to look at maximizing the use of space, the ADU concept offers the opportunity for homeowners to do just that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about ADUs, affordable dwelling units, as a vehicle to not only increase your bottom line, but also to help address the affordable housing issue in the District of Columbia, or for that matter, wherever you happen to live, where there may be high housing costs. If you have a question, if you have a comment, and are interested in trying to figure out how you might be able to do it, as well as what obstacles there may be in doing it, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. To that point, let's be clear, Dana. It's one thing to perhaps have room in your house with a separate entrance, okay? Or, as I said, an apartment over the garage. But when you are talking about an additional unit in your backyard, for example, building one, you're not just going to put a she shed back there and let somebody rent it. There are things that you would have to deal with.
Absolutely. There are code restrictions. There are building requirements that are still consistent with the city's code. There's safety issues that have to be addressed. And the purpose of our pilot is really to explore means by which we can make these dwellings not only affordable, but the opportunity makes sense economically for the homeowner. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we recognize that one's property is often the most valuable asset that they have. How can we create structures that add value to that property and at the same time create wealth and create opportunities for income? It is important to understand that also most of our homeowners, many of our homeowners east of the river, are aged homeowners. So when we look at this, you have to also look at it from a standpoint of intergenerational wealth. So in some cases, if you're a senior, you may very well want to engage those who will be managing your estate in the future in your decision as you go forward, because there's going to be debt that's associated with this. It's going to have an impact upon the net value of your estate. Certainly, it will appreciate in value, but at the same time, you have to be real about the cost of producing this housing and at the same time, the return on the investment.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, how did you become involved in this process?
I think it's been a lifelong importance of mine. My father's father, they were in Virginia, and they would build their own homes, and some was taken through eminent domain, but I grew up in a home, a house that he owned, but it had some poor conditions. So safety, efficiency, having an environmentally safe home and ownership are some things that I've learned through my parents. We didn't have a lot, but the importance and the value of owning and making the best of your situation was something that has always been instilled in me. I moved in 2003. I moved here in the city. I saw the thinking, the perspective of ownership is different. So I started a nonprofit in 2003, And one of the facets of it when I established it was to address issues as it relates to perspective, making sure that people understand that impossibilities are just perceived. And one big impossibility that a lot of people have is home ownership and healthy homes. A lot of people may live in conditions that they do not really control the value and the aesthetics and the safety of it. And a lot of people are scared to own. So a part of what the organization is designed to do is to teach people how to save, teach people that they can own. Also, on the other end, to try to train people in how to do. And Santa to Say is a grassroots entity, but I think that the strategy, movement, all of that is great. But in more recent years, 2015, just really looking at what is a best value add for housing. And I'm looking at it from the environmental perspective, and that's the material that's used to actually construct the edifice that someone lives and operate in.
And that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because a lot of people, no matter how much land you have, your average person has one house. And if you're talking about building a structure in the backyard that will house one person or maybe two people or a small family, let's say a family of three, what kind of cost, what kind of investment are we talking about here?
I would say it will vary depending on the scale of what you could actually legally put in that backyard. So I think it will be DCRA, understanding the code, understanding the rights. If you're building close to the curb, to the sidelines, how much space you need, you have to go through and understand that process first to then determine how much square footage could be added. And you have to look at what all do you want to add to that unit to make it a safe and habitable and aesthetically pleasing space for someone to live in. My proposing is to think of maybe like shipping containers as a great option. I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
No, please go ahead. You were talking about the shipping containers, the cargo containers that we often see in the ports. They have become rather a popular material for building.
Yes, and I would think, and I know that they're a great structure because they're non-porous. A lot of wood is, or it is porous in general. We need to save our environment more. We need to upcycle and use structures that are already here. And it's sound. If we have any kind of acclimate weather, whether it's a hurricane, fire, or whatever it may be, you would definitely have a house that's standing that's made of steel versus one that is of wood. And I'm not knocking wood or stick-built homes, but I'm saying there may be a safer, better, more environmentally pleasing, and more affordably, financially pleasing option. And the structure is already there, so you're saving costs coming in with a container versus a stick-built ADU or another unit in your backyard.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about ADUs, affordable dwelling units, something that you may be able to add to your property to help boost your income, but also address the affordable housing issue in your community. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. Before I go back to you, Dana, Amanda, you did say that you already have, in the case of those containers, a building or lack of, but let's be clear, those shipping containers are built for shipping. They are not houses. And so they do.
They can be.
But they have to be converted. I mean, it's not like you're just going to just stick one in the backyard, stick a door on it, and you are good to go. I mean, this is certainly a very, very a complex undertaking.
It's the same looking at traditional building. I'm just mentioning the cost impact and also the environmental impact, because you already have a steel build structure that's going to last and it's going to save you money. Yes, it's going to need the same finishes as you would as a stick build. It's still going to need electric. It's still going to need plumbing. It's still going to need insulation. It's still going to need some of the same calls as traditional construction.
Mm-hmm. Dana, are you familiar with this as an option?
I'm familiar with this as an option, and quite honestly, the purpose of this pilot is to look at multiple options. We're not promoting any one particular option.
Of course not.
What
yeah.
we are looking for are better ways of making this an economically viable process. The other thing is that we're putting together a how-to manual. And one of the reasons is that while this may seem grandiose in terms of a process, there's some reality that comes with being a landlord. There's some things about managing property. There are things about maintaining property. There are things about protecting your investment that are key in this conversation. And so while we are promoting accessory dwelling units as an option, as an option to both increase wealth and as an option also to improve and increase the availability of affordable housing stock, we realize that there are perils in this process that must be faced with reality, and that we have to also take in consideration that the regulatory environment with regard to health and safety for occupancy in this city aren't going to change. So we have to be looking at models, multiple models that make sense in different communities. The aesthetic approach, the size of the lot, multiple factors have to be taken into consideration. Mm-hmm. What we've also done is we've traveled and participated with people from across the country who have created, if you will, the next generation in this whole process of accessory dwelling units. And we are bringing those models and that information to bear in this conversation.
I want to talk a little bit more about some of those options, as well as some of the challenges that may confront people who may say, hey, this sounds like a really great idea. And so before they jump in with both feet, they need to know what kinds of not only financial investments, but also investments in time and some of the risks, as well as some of the upsides. I'm going to take a break in a bit, and we are going to lose Amanda. But Amanda, before we do, how might people be able to find out more about you and Unify?
The website is Unify Inc., and that's the acronym United Nation of Individuals Fighting Impossibilities. So that's UNIFI Inc.org, and we will update the site to add more about it, but the contact information is on the site. If you're looking for a call and or email us, if people are inquiring about options and information and leads, and whether that's connecting to UPO for additional understanding and et cetera, that there are a lot of great opportunities, and we definitely want people to be able to have more access to better opportunities to increase their quality of life.
And that's UNIFI Inc.org?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Jamal and Ruby on the line. So please do not hang up. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are continuing our conversation about increasing your income on your own property by adding an ADU, an affordable dwelling unit, or auxiliary dwelling unit. We continue this conversation with Dana Jones, President and CEO of the United Planning Organization, also known as UPO. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jamal, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Jamal, are you there?
I think it's a great idea. I think the ball was dropped decades ago. I think, like, they passed a buck on a lot of public housing, but Fort Hound, was sold out to out-of-town contractors. And that land could have been utilized instead of the ball being passed to a homeowner. I mean, it seemed like a great idea for the homeowner economically, but for the city, something that should have been thought of way before the city sold out on all these little small properties.
Interesting. Thank you so much, Jamal. One of the things is, unfortunately, we don't always have crystal balls, Dana. And to his point, no one could have possibly foreseen the incredible rise in the cost of housing in the District of Columbia over the past, 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, I think what we're looking at is a national phenomenon, reurbanization of America. And so when we look at that and we look at how people are returning to urban settings, we're seeing the impact of supply and demand. The other thing is that because urban centers have struggled with the disinvestment from the federal government, they've had to look at strategies to basically create environments that will attract persons of higher incomes. The District of Columbia's strategies, whether it is articulated as movement to the middle class or whatever strategy we use in our growth and development conversations, land use is the first area that you see impacted by that. And certainly that impacts the supply and the cost.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ruby calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Ruby. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening, everyone.
Hi.
I am in the process of doing an Airbnb or renting out a couple of rooms in my house. However, I also have a basement that has a separate entrance and exit. And so I'm interested in how much or what would be the investment in helping me dig out my basement to satisfy the code in D.C.
When you say dig out, what do you mean?
Yeah, my ceiling is 2 inches low. I had an inspector come in and tell me that my ceiling was 2 inches low.
Oh, too low for
too low.
To
rent it out.
I see. So how to raise the ceiling, and I would imagine it's not a what they call a drop ceiling or something like that. It is a hard ceiling.
No, yes.
Wow. Rent to a short person. Gosh, because I mean.
I know. Well, you know, the funniest thing about it is that I've been doing a business. I had an occupancy permit for the basement, and I had been doing a business in my basement for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
I gave up my business, to do other things, and now I want to rent it out. And now they're saying, I don't know how you got a permit, but, an occupancy permit for this because your ceiling is 2 inches low, too low.
Mm.
And so now they're saying that I would have to, raise the ceiling.
Well,
so what should I do?
I think what you're experiencing is a change in use, and often a change in use requires you to use newer regulations. I'm assuming that in your former use of that space that you probably were grandfathered by prior regulations. And when the use changed, then you had to apply it to new use. I think that you need to look towards an excavating contractor with the possibility of taking your flooring down a bit so that you may, in fact, meet those height requirements. I think that the fact that you have the structure already, what you're really talking about is removal of the floor and the relocation of your infrastructure, meaning essentially your plumbing and other factors that are there. Based upon your exiting strategy for water, sewer, the rest of those things, you may be able to achieve that within some cost reasonability. I say that saying that every situation is different. I would recommend that you get contractors. I normally recommend people to talk to at least three persons, because what's ended up happening here is that you have the removal of that flooring, the replacement of the infrastructure, and the cost of either pouring a new floor in there to deal with. And you have to weigh the cost-benefit analysis there. But get three contractors, take a look at it. What you're experiencing is not unusual when you change use in a space.
Mm.
Well, could ADU help me with?
It may very well be an option that you may want to consider. I would recommend that you call 202-562.
Well, hold on for a minute, Ruby, because all of the information that we will be sharing tonight will be posted on our website on WHUR.com. Okay. However, I will allow Mr. Jones to share that with you. But if you don't get it, there will be websites, there will be a podcast, so you will be able to hear this again tonight after 8:30, including your question. But please, Dana, go right ahead with that phone number.
Again, 202-562-3800.
Whoa, slow down. Go ahead, Dana, one more time, please.
202-562.
Uh-huh.
3800.
Okay. Ruby, thank you so much for calling, and good luck to you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I think Ruby's question is very, very typical, because we are talking about whether we are adding or subtracting from homes that we already own, or building an entire structure. And at first, on the face of it, even if you're a homeowner, we are talking about building another home.
We are talking about building another home. We're talking about compliance to building code and standard. We are talking about even compliance standards that may not have existed when we built our own home, or when that home that we live in was constructed. And so in some cases, you're going to have exactly what Ruby faced when use has changed, or when regulatory processes change. The homeowner will have to become acquainted with new rules. I say all of that recognizing that's why it's critical to look at this from a standpoint of what works and what makes sense. This is not a freebie. It's a financial investment. It's a debt. It's an opportunity to build upon an appreciable basis. But at the same time, we have to be very real that there are costs that will be incurred in this process. We've seen something take place in this phenomenal growth in the city. And that is, we went through a period here about in the last 5 years where we've seen smaller units being developed. There were brand new apartments built in this city, sub 400 square feet. The efficiency has become a model in this city because we have often a younger transient population, and a younger population that does not live under the traditional bounds of what it is to be in a house. They are very mobile and very community minded and out and about. And so there's a market for a smaller unit. There are markets for individuals in a city such as Washington, but there are costs, and so we need to take those in consideration.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about affordable dwelling units, or auxiliary dwelling units, ADUs, how they may not only help you add to your bottom line, but also deal with some of the issues of affordable housing in the communities where you live. And I think, to that point, one of the things that we've seen, because we're not always talking about full construction. Building another house in the backyard would be, as you said, an investment, at the very, very least, a huge investment before you get somebody in there to, for example, rent it. But what we have seen, and I think Capitol Hill is a prime example, there are some longtime Washingtonians, for example, friends of my family who have been here in the District of Columbia for 50 or 60 years, and they bought some of those beautiful old stone houses just a few blocks from the U.S. Capitol, and now they are, even as they've gotten older, they have been able to rent out basements and the like. And if you do have the space, that would seem to be you know, a great idea, but you don't have to be on Capitol Hill, because even in some of those grand homes east of the river, there are options there.
There are options there. And there's something else here that I think you want to keep in mind. As we age, our occupancy needs change. One of the strategies that people are using in other communities is that they are creating the space that they need as they age as an accessory dwelling unit.
What do you mean by that?
Well, let's say for an example, I may need wheelchair accessibility. I may need to be able to use a walker. I may need to have a different type of restroom set up. And perhaps my existing structure is not conducive to that. I can build an accessory dwelling that meets my needs as I age in place and rent my original dwelling for a family need that needs larger space than I do. Our needs all change as we age, and so sometimes we can look at this strategy as an approach as well.
What are the risks of, particularly for in the African American community, of not at least looking at taking advantage of this kind of plan?
Well, I think the risk is with lost opportunity. And, you know, I think that one of the things that we need to really be thinking about in our communities of color is the whole concept of intergenerational wealth building. And so it's not just simply a concept of what works for me right now, but what will work for my family in the future as well. And so if we have this opportunity available to us, if it makes sense for us financially, if we can manage this process, then it's an opportunity to pass on a greater level of wealth to our children and our grandchildren. I think that we also need to understand that wealth is built not by cash or income. It's built by appreciable assets. And so when we think about that from that perspective, if we could spend $70,000 on a dwelling by putting in an ADU, have it cash flow, in other words, pay for itself, and at the same time add $100,000 value to our property, well, that's a win-win for everyone involved. And so it's that type of situation that we look at. We often talk about entrepreneurship. We often talk about micro businesses. This is yet another opportunity to look at how we actually use what we have to achieve more.
Certainly not an investment for the faint of heart, and maybe not even for those of a certain age.
Absolutely, absolutely. I encourage particularly persons of a certain age who want to consider this to do it in partnership with their family and with those who will be controlling their estate going forward, because, again, it represents debt, which also represents risk, and so risk needs to be managed. That's why we're going through this process and looking objectively at what these regulations permit and looking at strategies people that persons can employ, because it becomes imperative that these become financially viable entities that offer a return to the investor.
Well, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what you're trying to put together, this book of information that that people will obviously find helpful. Mm-hmm. We can kind of walk through that just a little bit more, interested in hearing the A to Z with that. We're going to take a break. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue to talk about ADUs, auxiliary dwelling units or affordable dwelling units, and adding to your bottom line and addressing the housing issue in your community. So, Dana, UPO was trying to put together this guide, this book to inform people as to what they need to know as they move through this project, if they're going to do it. Kind of walk me through some of the basics of what you need to know before you do jump into something like this.
Okay, well, let me just say that we, as part of this pilot project, will actually help 2 to 3 homeowners go through this process. So this is going to be from real live experiences that people encounter. We have some pre-development funding to help some persons go through this process. But clearly, as we go through this, we're going to start from ground zero. The zoning implications, the implications of the permitting process, what's involved in the process of bringing the new infrastructure that's going to be needed on site to make this a viable process. In addition to that, what models, whether they be stick built, whether they be containers, whether they be whatever, what makes sense in what environment, and how do you get the aesthetic response that creates the curb appeal that adds value to the property? Because at the end of the day, our interest is about the economic well-being of the homeowner. And so we recognize that this requires investment, but this investment is not for the faint of heart. So when we look at this, we are a certified housing counseling agency. So we're going to be looking at this from an economic standpoint, what makes sense financially, what happens in the appraisal process, the new appraisal, to make sure that, in fact, if you use your existing dwelling as a means of leveraging the equity in it or other things as a means of creating the right financial environment for this to work for you, what does this mean to you? Beyond that, I think it's going to be instructive, because what we're going to have an opportunity to do is then to turn to policymakers and say, this is an obstacle. This cost is a prohibitive process. This regulatory process is restrictive. And so what we get from this opportunity is the opportunity to help our policymakers and our leaders in the city look at what it means to implement this in communities such as those in Ward 7 and 8. And in addition to that, we find out exactly what it means for the homeowner. And so we're going to be building this manual as we go along. Our experiences will aid us in that process. And what we encounter in this process as we walk hand in hand with the homeowner will also inform us as we create strategies for going forward.
When you've had conversations with some of the agencies in the district and talking about this pilot program, what has been the foundational kind of discussion? Because it's one thing to do Airbnb. It's one thing to rent out your basement to a college student or something. Sure. But when you're talking about building an entirely new structure that for a community historically was not zoned or planned for that, that's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And you also have to keep in mind that you have neighbors, and we have other people who are going to be impacted by the value of your property. And so the regulatory process is not going to be lightened to make this work. What we're going to find is that because we have the right by virtue of the regulation, we won't have to go through rezoning or anything like that. But we still will have to deal with the building codes. We still have to deal with health and safety issues. We still have to deal with bankable deals.
What do you mean by bankable deals?
And when I
deals?
Say bankable deals, I mean, in essence, when a lender looks at this, the lender's going to be looking at how do I secure this? Is this a deal that makes sense to the bank financially? This equity, does the homeowner have enough equity there to do what needs to take place? What are the risks involved in this? And so not just that. I mean, I think that when you get into the renting business, you got to look at replacement reserve funding. You got to look at maintenance and ongoing operational costs. There's several aspects of this that are not to be taken lightly. It's not simply going to be money that comes in without some issues. I think the other part about that is while the tax code allows for depreciation of rental properties, there's a reason for that. And that's because I know of no one who's ever been a landlord who has not had to fix something, have not had to repair something, has not had to replace something. And so all of those are realities that need to be a part of understanding what it means to manage property, what it means to maintain value in that asset, what it means ongoing to maintain a flow, what happens with rent loss reserves? Because
what do you mean rent loss reserve? You mean for if a tenant
doesn't pay you? If a tenant doesn't pay you, that doesn't mean that the bank is going to forgive it. It simply means that you've got to be prepared for the encounters that come with this process.
And what if you can't rent it?
Exactly. Or let's say, for an example, that there is a destruction to the property that requires you to fix it to re-rent it. There's that low period when nobody can use the property. Mm-hmm. So rent loss reserves are all about those kinds of things. So all of those factors have to be taken in consideration. This is a business opportunity. It should not be looked at lightly, but it should not be looked at unrealistically. To use the words of the great Jeremiah Wright, money does not automatically cometh. Mm-hmm. You know, there's work involved in this process. There's study.
But the other thing is with all of those potential challenges and realistic piles of things that somebody taking this up needs to know, it still is not something that should just be tossed aside. It does have the potential, as you said, to be of great benefit, not only to you as an individual, your family, you know, for many, many years.
Absolutely. And I think that's the point that's key. It's the creation of an appreciable asset. And that means that the value is going to grow and grow and grow. You have to protect that value. That's what asset management is about, protecting that value. And what we hope to do is to introduce people to the realities of what it means to be a landlord and what it means to get there and to stay there and to be successful.
For those who are interested in finding out more about this, the phone number, of course, 202-562-3800. But what about a website where there can be more information that they can find out more about?
UPO.org.
There it is, UPO.org. Well, Dana Jones with UPO, I really appreciate you coming in and sharing this with us, and we will continue to listen out for not only the book that you're trying to compile, but also this pilot project. And we just hope that it is successful.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Also, we want to thank Amanda Stevenson with Unify for participating in the conversation as well. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, August 14th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can get all of this information on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30, including the podcast. So make sure that you log on after 8:30. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.